We're really happy tonight to have one of the world's great photographers joining us, and that, of course, is Jim Brandenburg, who resides in Ely. He's from Laverne originally, and he's currently been working on a prairie project down in that neck of the woods, or I don't know if you call it the woods down there, neck of the prairie. And Jim is talking to us from Sioux Falls. So, Jim, thank you so much for joining us here on the Roadhouse.
Well, Buck, it's a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure.
Your neighbor's up there usually, and it seems strange to be out here in this windblown prairie to be talking up there to the edge of beautiful Lake Superior. I hear it was windy there yesterday.
It was brutally windy, especially when it comes out of the east across the bay of Lake Superior, and kind of chilly. But down where you're at right now, I think you've got a little more pleasant weather started yesterday or so.
Well, I've been sitting for 2 weeks waiting for the wind to stop blowing and the rain to stop falling. And today is one of those beautiful, perfect, classic prairie days with the pillowy clouds and everything's so green. Seems like I moved to a different country here. It's so different than it's been.
Just overnight.
My friends in other parts of the country, the world, say this Midwest chit-chat. You guys always talk about the weather in the Midwest. It's funny, other parts of the country don't talk about it like we do, but it's really a topic of conversation because we have so much of it.
It changes so much.
Exactly.
Yeah, where they don't see that kind of thing. If you're in L.A., you know, as you know from that movie from a few years ago, you can do your weather from the golf course. Don't have to worry about any changes.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, Jim, recently four of your photographs were selected by the International League of Conservation Photographers for inclusion in the top 40 nature photographs in the history of photography. And that has to be such a great honor and great feeling for you to have. Actually, you've got 1/10 of the photographs that are in that top 40, and we're going back to all the famous photographers from when we first started taking photos. It's just quite an honor.
Well, thank you, Buck. I don't say that too many times or too loud because I think it might be a mistake.
Well,
they might find me out, or they might change their mind. You know me, Buck. I'm kind of elusive and known as reclusive to the extreme. And I guess I'm a member of this group. They've given me an honorary membership, but I've never answered an email, and I've never gone to a meeting. And I thought, well, I didn't even know about this competition. It's not a competition. It was kind of an analysis of where we were in photography. But so I was over in Europe when my daughter Heidi called me, and I thought she was joking. So actually, it's kind of goofed my head up. I'd have to say that you've got a lot of Norwegians up there, and I came from a Norwegian family, and the way I grew up was those nails that stick up the highest on the board are the first ones to get hit with a hammer, and so you don't talk about it, you don't brag about it, and it's seriously, though, it's actually kind of maybe a little screwy in the head. I don't know quite what to think of, because it doesn't seem real. It really doesn't. I'm very honored, but I feel like it's not me. It doesn't feel me.
Well, we definitely feel that it is you, and those photographs are amazing, as so many of yours are. In fact, when I looked at them, I thought, you know, there's a lot of other Jim's photographs that could just as well be in here, too.
Oh, you're so good. You've been with me, and we had the most fun up in the Slave Islands that I've had in years and years and years. You saw how it is. It has to be fun for it to work. It doesn't mean that it's all fun, but it's like a lot of work, a lot of business. There has to be some passion and joy in it. There has to be, otherwise something, the magic is gone.
I should share with the folks out there, Jim talks so humbly of himself, but when you watch him work, you realize just the talent and the eye that goes into those photographs. I watched Jim just walking along the beach, little raindrops falling, and I saw him taking photographs of the beach, and I thought, what is he doing? And it wasn't that much longer after we got home when it became apparent to me, and that beautiful photograph you took of the beach and the raindrops hitting it, and it's just gorgeous. And That's something I wouldn't have even, and most people would never think of, and there you were, along with all the other photographs you got during that period of time and that you keep producing.
Well, thanks, Buck. That's all I know how to do, so that's all I know how to do. That's all I've ever done, so it's... Thank you. You're too kind.
Well, you also, and here's another thing that most people wouldn't know. You played guitar for Chuck Berry.
Well, right here in Sioux Falls, where I am today, actually. Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Was the last time I played with them. I remember we had a couple thousand screaming kids, and that was one of the last times I played. I got out of the music business because it was crazy, totally crazy. Chuck Berry was one of the craziest of them all, but he's become a legend. You know, that was a long... I was a teenager then.
Uh-huh.
And I played with the Everly Brothers. It was the same. And it was a tough time in rock and roll. There were a lot of drugs and a lot of drinking and a lot of deaths on the highway after Saturday night dances in those little towns. And I loved nature so much. I just had this one passion, I guess, living up in the North Woods in a little cabin. Rock and roll didn't fit into it quite so well, but yeah, that was another time. Still have music in my head. I, in some ways, I wish I had a double life. I love music very, very much, but some way it's all connected, Buck, I think. Mm-hmm. The rhythm of whether you're a potter or a dancer or a photographer or a violin player, you know, it's all kind of about rhythm.
Jim, how did you first get involved in photography? You were playing music, obviously. When did the bug hit you?
Well, it was nature. I grew up real close to the Blue Mountain State Park, which is one of our great state parks. I think it has the most number of bird species in the state, if I remember right. I hope I'm not wrong there, but it's because we're on the edge, we're on the Missouri River watershed basin, we get a few more species along with some of the others. But it's a great park, a big prairie park, and I would go out there. I'd walk out and hang out, especially in the winter, pretend like I was in the Arctic. Nature was so overwhelming, and I was a very deep hunter at the time. My family was deep into hunting. And there's a certain point where killing animals seemed a little strange in a way. I loved to be out pursuing them. So I thought, well, why don't I just use a camera and do the same exact thing, sneak up on an animal, and then you get the trophy as the picture. The animal runs away, and you can see him the next day. And it really wasn't necessarily an art aesthetic situation. It was more of like an old primal, you know, this is my weapon, in a sense. I want to capture that animal with the camera instead of with the bullet. And then it evolved into more of an aesthetic and more of an art situation, and when I went into journalism and started telling stories with a camera, now I'm back full circle. Most of my work now is just for me, kind of an aesthetic, artful depiction rather than a documentary or journalistic one.
You spent many, many years as a photographer for National Geographic, and I think most people associate you with those photographs taken all over the world. Is it as romantic as it sounds to travel like that and to be in those types of places, or was there just a lot of pressure for photographs? How did that work for you?
Well, I suppose it's all relative compared to what my dad was doing, you know, laying carpeting and driving a truck. Yeah, it was very romantic, but there was a lot of pressure, an incredible amount of pressure. I still think of myself as a geographic person. I haven't done an assignment for them for a long time. They want me to go do something in Europe, a very, very special place in Europe, this summer. I'm not sure I want to do it. Things have changed. Compared to the way it is now, the traveling is so horrible. The airplanes, the airports, the pressure and the stress and the tension. Back when I worked for the Geographic, Buck, it was amazing. We always traveled first class, and we had a nice budget, and we were highly respected. It was always, they forget your name, but they knew the National Geographic guy was here or coming. They rolled out the red carpet. I could tell you stories that you wouldn't believe of kings and queens that, you know, I could get in and see and do almost anything I wanted just with a simple phone call because it was and I think it still is a highly respected magazine, but it isn't the same, not even close to the same, because the world is different. It's just a different. It isn't as much fun as it used to be.
I think all of us who have traveled recently would have to concur with traveling is not the, especially air travel, not what it used to be. And it's just, you're lucky if you get there without major delays. But I think, as you mentioned, National Geographic still opens doors for everybody that name.
It does.
And the name Jim Brandenburg now opens doors too, as it may not have in your earlier days.
Oh, yeah, I suppose. You can't believe your own press releases, you know. You can't if you think about it too much, and that's something that's been real hard for me the last couple, 3 weeks, because you start believing a little bit, and then you think of the ramifications of what that really means. And what I finally do is the big reward is what my grandkids and great-grandkids and my progeny will do down the line. They can talk about it a little bit, but right now, like, I'm at my sister's house in Sioux Falls, and she puts everything in perspective. She doesn't seem to care, doesn't seem to know much about it. It makes me feel good around people like that. It's just because it's not a priority with them, and it is with most people. But it's a nice thing, I think, for some of my family to be proud of.
You had so many major projects over the years that different people will associate you with different projects, and of course the White Wolf project up in the Arctic, and your more recent project being taking one photograph, one shot per day for a year, which was really an interesting concept, and maybe you can explain how that may or may not have changed the way that you look at photography or your concentration?
Well, I think so. You know, life is a strange thing, and I do a lot of public speaking now, especially in Europe. But when I do speak, I speak about that project a lot, because it's something we can all use in what any of us do in life. And that I was at a point in my career, even in the National Geographic, you reach kind of a burnout stage. I think I'd just done all the wolf projects, the White Wolf Project and the Brother Wolf book, and the wolf groupies bust their souls. You know, it was like being in the rock and roll band again. They were all kind of squealing and wanted to be close to wolves, and they thought I had the key to it. And so I built that house up near Ely and closed the gate and put up a sign, and I couldn't work for the Geographic anymore. I walked out, and I just couldn't. It was just too much for my simple mind. And I walked away from it, and I thought, well, I'm just going to do something just for me for a change. Plus, I'm sick of being asked, how many rolls of film did you shoot to get that one picture?
Oh.
I mean, that everywhere I went, it was like, well, you guys at the National Geographic, of course, they give you a million rolls of film, and you just go out, anybody could do that. So I thought, well, I think maybe I'll just do a project where one picture a day. And it's very intuitive, very instinctive, and did it without talking to many people. And I wrote about it. And it became the most visible project and probably the most message-driven project and maybe the most positive and proud project I've ever done. And it wasn't meant to be sold, wasn't meant to be commercial. I didn't think I'd ever sell it, make any money on it, or do anything with it except do a slideshow for the family. And then I remember National Geographic wanted me to do a wolf story out in Yellowstone. I said, no. I don't think so. And they said, what have you been doing lately? And I told them about this project, and they flew out and tried to talk me into going out to the wolves, and I showed them this one picture a day of the Chase by the Light project. And the editor said, let me take that back to Washington. Show it around. Well, he took it back, and then they said, as soon as he got back, he called, and he said, we're going to publish this as a cover story in the next issue that we can get it in. And I thought he was joking. And that project really did open up a gallery. That's when my printmaking started. And I probably have had more response. And I get very kind, thoughtful letters from people yet today, how some people even say it changed their life. That doesn't make sense to me in some ways. But so I'm proud of that, only because it makes people think, makes people kind of better at getting through the struggles they have in their life. It's a very personal story, and I think that's the message I would have, is follow your instincts. You've done that, Buck. I know that about you. And you seem to be a pretty balanced and happy guy.
Some people might question that, Jim, but thank you so much for saying it anyway. Yeah, that is one thing that we're so close to, that project up here, and also your collaboration with Michael Monroe.
Michael and Deb, they're like family to me. I don't get up there much, as I'm embarrassed. But yes, I feel very close to those folks. We're going to do some more concerts now. I think we've got some on the schedule. Mm-hmm. Fall, I think, this fall and winter.
And for those folks that... Maybe there's a few people out there who aren't aware of that project, one or two, but I should remind folks anyway that Jim did a project with Michael Monroe, with Michael doing the music and Jim, of course, having the photographs, and talk about hitting the senses, kind of a concert to go to. Maybe you could talk just briefly about that, Jim?
You mean the one at the Walker?
Yes.
Guthrie, I mean?
Yes.
Yeah, the Guthrie Theater. Let me tell you, you know, it's a little bit of show business, I guess. I guess I kind of grew up in show business, and Michael's deeply involved in it. And the trauma of me going on stage is still. I mean, I can't even tell you what it feels like sometimes. Stage fright, and then when I get on stage, everything feels good. But I'll tell you, one of the worst experiences of my life was here. We are at the Guthrie Theater, sold out crowd. Hometown, all of our friends, and just before the show was to go on, the big, huge, sophisticated projector wasn't going to work.
Oh, no.
And that's what I do. It'd be like the electricity went out for an electric guitar. You can't, and so what are we going to do? So the stress level was beyond comparison.
Yeah.
We actually thought about canceling the show. Well, my side of it anyway. Michael wouldn't, but and so just before we opened the doors, my son Anthony had a quick fix on it and fixed it. But the trauma from that, post-traumatic syndrome, lives today. When I go on stage and if I don't have these projectors right or something, I get into a panic. But anyway, I felt I was about one-third there. I was so scared and stressed out. But it was probably one of the more interesting venues I've ever done. Being with Michael, he's such a cool guy, so smooth and so damn talented, scary. Being a guitar player and being on stage with him, watching him play, I mean, my photography seems like a hobby compared to what he does. So it's very honored. We get along really well. We've had a lot of fun together. Want to do a lot more projects.
But one thing about it is that your guitar might actually be prettier than his.
Well, I've got a pretty special guitar. That it's so beautiful, I'm afraid to play it.
Well,
it's a lot better than I am.
You know, I'm going to touch on that a little bit more before we're done, but I thought I'd ask you, I understand that you've been doing some film work for the BBC, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about what that has been entailing for you.
Yeah, that was fun, actually. A good friend of mine is a producer, one of David Attenborough's producers there at the BBC in England. And he just finished putting together, along with some other folks, the sequel, as I would call it, to Planet Earth, which was a very well-known, successful run of 10 hours of storytelling of nature. And this project was called Life. And I think it just finished playing in the United States. And we did some filming up in Ely and then some down our prairie down here near Laverne, Touch of Sky Prairie. And it took 3 years, and I did a lot of highly technical things of time lapse, and you can see some of the lakes and the boundary waters back behind our home and our property go through a whole season in about 15 seconds. You see it go from fall to freeze up in winter and then spring again. And then water lilies growing up through the ice. And it was a 3-year project, and I'll tell you, working with the folks at the BBC is humbling. These guys are pros. They are so incredibly good. It's beyond me. I can't work with them anymore. They're too good. I just can't do it. It's too stressful.
I've noticed more than one of your water lily photographs on your website. And by the way, we'll have to touch on that before we're done too, where folks can go. And it amazes me, the clarity of those photographs underwater and how you did that. They're just beautiful. The stills that you have.
It's all done with tricks.
Oh, it's tricks. I know better than that, Jim.
It's actually fairly simple. When you live in an area, you can really fully explore. That's one of the reasons I want to move up to northern Minnesota. There, you can't just visit the place and do a story on wolves, and you can't just visit it. You have to live in a place to completely tell the story. And then finally, you have so much work that you've accumulated from that place you've lived, it's too big to publish. And it becomes so personal, you can't even edit it. So I have so much work that I haven't shown and haven't put together. I've got 200 hours of HD video of a movie I was working on. Some of it was going to be done in Grand Marais yet. Still haven't quite finished it. But it's just one of those things that's never done. When you work for the Geographic, you offer 6 weeks to 2 months, and you know you got a beginning and you have an end, and you kind of pace it and you do it. You get the opening shot and the big spreads and then the closing shots, and then you're done. But when you live in a place and you work, you don't think about that. You just kind of keep working. And I suppose that's beautiful too, but it's not a very good business plan.
Well, it'll give you a project to hop to, and if you ever have a slow moment, I'm sure you have a lot of projects back there that you'd like to tackle. So,
life is too short.
It is. We've been speaking with Jim Brandenburg, and Jim has been honored with four photographs included by the International League of Conservation Photographers for inclusion in their top 40 nature photographs in the whole history of photography. And it's just an amazing award for one individual when you consider all the wonderful photographers and since the photography began, whenever that was. Jim, we should mention your website that people can go to, and also the galleries where your works can be seen, especially here in Grand Marais, and then also in Ely, your own gallery.
Yes, thank you, Buck. Yeah, it's just simply jimbrandenburg.com, and it's a new website. Not all my latest work is on there. The last 4 years I've worked mainly in Europe, I guess. That's where I've been pushing lately with another story that probably could talk about another time. But the website, you can look at all the 40 photographs that were picked. I think there'll be a blog or a link to the images that this group of people picked. And then, of course, the Sievertson galleries, they're like family to me also. Dear folks, they're the only place I show my work outside of my own galleries. The one in Duluth, and of course, the special one up in Grand Marais. And we have a gallery in Ely and then one in Laverne. The one in Laverne is nonprofit, which supports the local community and the Brandenburg Prairie Foundation. And with that, we've set aside 1,000 acres of tall grass prairie down here in Rock County. By the way, as I was saying earlier to you, Buck, off the air, Rock County is the only county in the state of Minnesota without a natural lake. Can you believe that?
We're going to have to ship one down.
It's very interesting to be in a place like this. Even culturally, it's very interesting. It's very different. It's very South Dakota-like. And
fishing opener doesn't mean much there.
Except they all go north.
Yeah, that's somewhere.
Have you heard the story about the southern Minnesota fishermen up north?
Not yet.
They wear a pair of bib overalls and they stick a $10 bill in their pocket, and they don't change either one for the whole week.
We see a little bit of that.
That's my folks. That's my culture.
You know, I could easily, and we could easily talk to Jim for hours here on the program. It's so interesting, and I hope that we can do this again very soon. We barely touched on your prairie restoration program. We'd like to do that again. Right now I have my partner, my co-host tonight, wanted to ask you a little bit about the condition of your guitar.
Yes, I heard a rumor that David Seaton is there, and it's almost intimidating to me. Talk about talent. David, if you're there, your face, Well, if your face is shining bright red because you deserve it. I mean, that guitar that you made for me, that surprise.
Well, what I'd really like to hear is some music from you on it. That would make it a real prize.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, I brag about a little bit about what I used to do playing with these big shots, but I can't. Let me tell you how good my guitar playing is. When we played at the Guthrie Theater, I was so flustered that I'm quite sure that Michael turned my amp off.
I don't hardly think so.
But that, David, that guitar, that's one of the first things we drag out when people come. We want to impress. We don't show pictures. We show that guitar, and people are just blown away. And I say it is so beautiful, and it's sounding better.
That's
it's
good.
In perfect shape.
Excellent. Well, I actually did talk to your daughter recently, and she said that you've been playing it. It's still holding up well, so I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, I have been playing it, and it's holding up well. And you said it would get better the way
you
played it. And it does seem to have a little more timbre, or what's the word, texture, fullness.
Oh, just good sound.
But you should see when people come in, David, they think Jim the photographer. And, let me show you a guitar I have. It's the look guy built. All right, yeah, it's going to be made out of 2x4s and alien wire.
Well, that's okay. If it's any matter to you, I mean, in my shop, I have your 30 or 90 photographs poster up on the wall in my shop, and I point that out to them instead of looking at my guitars.
Well, when I open up that case and pull that guitar out, I can see, especially people that are in the know, people that are either in the business. I've had some pretty big names there from the music business I won't brag about here, but you can imagine who they are, and they are just blown away. I mean, they just can't.
Well, the only problem, Jim, is none of them have ordered one yet.
Well, I think you're kind of a shy. You're kind of like I am. We need a business plan and a marketer out there.
I'm going to have to take over that job, I guess, sounds like.
Yeah, Buck's the only one with business sense in this conversation.
I just have no artistry.
We'll
have to meld that, huh?
For themselves.
Happiness
how would
is
you
artistry.
Like to just do that full time now? That's another consideration. If you get that out there, you'd be working on that as a full-time deal, and maybe it would be different.
Well, it's a possibility, but right now we're pretty happy doing what we're doing, and our boys are enjoying living on Hungry Jack Lake, and I have a feeling that there's somebody else in my family who might have something to say about me changing
careers. All right. Well, talk about a romantic lifestyle. You know, looking at those guitars and you're in Hungry Jack Lake, it just seems like the perfect situation. You've got beautiful art that plays music. Then you've got this incredible resort situation in the most beautiful place.
And wife who does
National Geographic said it's one of the 50 most important places to see in a lifetime. So,
oh yes,
there you go. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that, right? Then you're on a great little radio station. Wish you had more power. More people should hear that station.
Well, thank you very much, Jim. You know, we want to thank you so much for joining us here tonight, and we wish that you can do it more frequently, and look forward to seeing you hopefully in the near future, Jim Brandenburg.
Anytime, guys.
Let's go paddle.
Buck and David, thank you. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you so much, and hope to talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.